Welcome to Football Never Sleeps. We're spinning towards viral, we're caffeinated as usual, and we're your weekly YouTube show all about Notre Dame football and who's not going to be the next New York Giants football coach. I'm Eric Hansen. I'm not hitting it either. I'm in South Bend and just happy to have a working snowblower. He's Tyler James in LaCourte, and happy Christmas shopping season is over. Together, we are the Word Salad Avoiding Content Creators and Troublemakers at BlueAndGold.com. On tonight's show, well, Marcus Freeman had a really interesting four-word tweet earlier this week. We're going to break down what that means in terms of a restructured contract and his future at Notre Dame. We're also going to look at the comings and goings of the transfer portal, which will open on Friday, and a lot of the other loose ends with the roster construction. Recruiting buzz, we got that too, and of course, your questions front and center. So start filling up that portal. This is...
All right, way to go, Eric. Hopefully everyone has enjoyed their holiday season. We are here on a Tuesday night and happy to be with you all. I'm here with a new Christmas present of a webcam. Hopefully this view isn't off-putting, and I need to get the right settings to figure out how I want to do this, but this is where we're at as is. We're pretty busy right now, so messing with this I didn't get to spend a lot of time on troubleshooting, but I at least did fix the audio issue that we discovered yesterday with Mike Singer when we did a video, and I didn't realize that the audio wasn't going in the right feed, so I was coughing with that laugh, even though I thought I muted myself. So hopefully you guys don't have to deal with that. I am a little bit under the weather, but I'm doing all right, and we have plenty to discuss here on Tuesday night. First, make sure you like the video. Make sure you're subscribed to us here on the channel. Make sure you subscribe to us over at blueandgold.com. We are buzzing with new subscribers this month, and we're continuing to offer 50% off for annual subscriptions. New subscribers can sign up for the first year of an annual subscription for just $59.99. Use the link that's in our video description or head to blueandgold.com and hit the join button. And I think the natural place for us to start tonight, Eric, is Marcus Freeman announcing his return. He ended his silence by tweeting on Monday, 2026, run it back, go Irish. And that signifies his pledge to return to Notre Dame with the latest contract extension, which matched the reporting Eric's been doing for us over at Blue and Gold. Sports Illustrated's Pat Forty reported Freeman's revised agreement added 1 year to extend him through 2031, and his compensation is in the top tier of college coaches. I guess to start, Eric, how important do you think the timing of this announcement was for Notre Dame?
I felt like it needed to happen before the transfer portal opened up. I didn't think, you know, getting a new linebackers coach or a new assistant on defense was super pressing, but I felt like if you're going to be trying to get players to sign a contract with you and play for you in 2026, they're going to want to know whether you're there or not. So I felt like this had to be the week that this got done. And I know Marcus's process is really doing his research and getting to the bottom of everything. And it's not just about, should I stay or should I go? It's really about finding out what you are turning down instead of just saying, nah, I'm happy here at Notre Dame. And we can get into some of the reasons why there's an allure for the NFL and why the NFL would be interested in him. In fact, I just posted a column on that very topic.
Yeah, and I know there's some questions in the chat about that. Yeah, I think when we discussed this previously, I had said as long as this doesn't go into sort of next weekend with uncertainty on what Marcus Freeman is doing, then I didn't feel like there was a need for a lot of concern that has been sort of repeatedly expressed on social media and on message boards in the previous weeks with folks wanting some clarity on what Marcus Freeman was doing and how real any of this NFL stuff was. But yeah, now Notre Dame is gearing up to get ready to start trying to bring in some portal guys, finishing up trying to nail down who is returning and isn't returning for Notre Dame next season. And obviously he's got a linebackers coaching job to hire as well. So plenty of things on the to-do list now for Marcus Freeman moving forward. I think the format in which Marcus Freeman announced this and the way he did it maybe didn't necessarily help clear up things for those that wonder if Marcus Freeman is here for the long haul, but just because of the way he said 2026 running back, that almost sounds like a, it sounds more like a, to me, like a senior returning for his final year of college rather than a head coach getting ready to go into his next season at a job. Do you think that this NFL dalliance, or what I don't even know if you'd even describe it that way. Do you think this is a recurring process that's going to happen every offseason with Marcus Freeman?
I don't think it's going to happen. Could it happen? Yes. Because I don't think that there is structure that could ever take care of this legally. And again, when you think about, Tyler, what the world was like in college football when Marcus Freeman became the head coach and what it's like 4 years later, it's very different. You know, we've gone light years in terms of player rights and player movement. And I think, you know, so I will mention that in the column that I posted just a little bit ago, I talked to Charlie Weiss, who's a big fan of Marcus Freeman, who's lived in both of the worlds and who texts Marcus from time to time. We talked about what the allure would be for possibly for Marcus. They didn't discuss it, but Charlie had a lot of ideas about it and also why the NFL would be interested in him. And a lot of people think that the biggest thing driving college coaches to look at the NFL is recruiting and getting away from that. And Charlie wasn't buying that. He felt like you have as much scouting to do for the combine and other things that you have to do with recruiting. His thought was the whole NIL / rev share transfer portal thing, that you're really at the whim of your players, and you could lose your best five players any year. You know, if they want to go somewhere else, they can go somewhere else next year, and then they can do that again, and they can lather, rinse, repeat until they're out of eligibility. There's a quarterback that's going to be on a seventh school. And so Charlie's feeling was, until you get that fixed, there's more stability in being an NFL coach than there is as a college coach right now. And it was just the opposite for many, many years. And so that's why I think Marcus wanted to get to the bottom of what's really going on, compare the two models and so forth, what's best for his family, what's best for stability. Right now, Marcus lives in the world very well of the NIL and the transfer portal. And Charlie admitted that being at an institution where you're getting guys that the education matters to a lot of them helps, but it's still a really scary place for a lot of college coaches to be. And now I'll stop rambling.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, I definitely agree with the sort of stability of the NFL and the uncertainties of college football. I do think Marcus Freeman is someone who's particularly wired to take advantage of the system that college football allows you. I mean, recruiting and all that brings in that, the molding of young men. Like, I think those are things that he is good at. And I think folks buy into, and I don't know that some of those things are as valued in the NFL or even a part of the process in the same way. So I think that it would be interesting to see what sort of success he would have in the NFL if and when he decides to do that. But I do think, like, personally, if just objectively, I think he seems more tailored to be a college football coach than an NFL coach, though I do see some similarities with some coaches who have had some success recently in the NFL, whether it's a Dan Campbell or Mike Vrabel. I think Marcus Freeman is being viewed in sort of similar veins as those guys. And that would be a way that he could potentially continue to draw interest from NFL teams, especially if those guys continue to have success at the NFL level.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons it works for Marcus and it works for Notre Dame football fans is his old school values. He's able to marry those with this new world that we're in, and they play well. His authenticity plays well, his caring about people, his relationship building, all those are great. And I think it does make him a really good fit at this level. Could it fit at the next level? I think so, but the dynamic is different. But I do think it matters. And I do think fan bases, Notre Dame's fan base loves it because Marcus, a lot of times talks like they think. He talks about his love for Notre Dame. He talks about appreciating the job he has. And I think that resonates with fans. And it's not a phony thing. He's not telling them what they want to hear. He's telling them how he truly feels. Now, will he feel that way a year from now, 7 years from now? You know, my sense is that he wanted this to be a decision that kept him here for the long haul, that he didn't want to go through this every offseason. And you think it's difficult to go through it when you don't have a bowl game or a playoff. Can you imagine doing it when you are going through that? And with the roster that they are putting together right now, you know, they're going to have to, I don't think it's possible that the committee will be able to keep them out next year without people running onto their lawns and not just Notre Dame fans with torches and pitchforks.
Yeah, the obviously things are building towards 2026 for this Notre Dame program, and even more reason for Marcus Freeman to stay. I did want to throw in this question from Indy in Georgia. I read Marcus Freeman was a top college coaching candidate for NFL jobs, but not a top candidate. Did Marcus Freeman ever interview for an NFL job, and or was he ever offered an NFL job?
I don't think either of those, and he hasn't worked at that level. He brings to the table and that NFL teams like is his leadership qualities. They love his leadership qualities and his management qualities. And they see him evolving every year. And they feel like that's a translatable skill set to the NFL. Now, Tyler follows the NFL a lot more than I do. And he could tell you specifically about different teams. But not all teams operate the same. One thing you would want if you're a college coach leaving college to go to the NFL is you would want control. And some organizations, it's more control for the coach than others. And then would even that same organization who just gave control to the coach they fired to bring Marcus in, would they necessarily give a guy without any NFL experience that kind of control right out of the gate? Would they want to have a little bit more with the general manager and that kind of thing? So again, these aren't, not all NFL opportunities are equal.
Yeah, I think the NFL interview process is a little bit different because there are rules and guidelines that the NFL teams have to follow, but particularly like the Rooney rule in terms of minority coaches. I don't know, like, to what extent, like, say for instance the New York Giants have had a coaches opening for a while, so they could have been doing research on Marcus Freeman for weeks and months and have a pretty good idea if they wanted to offer him the job before interviewing him. Obviously they would interview him, I think, to sort of seal the deal probably, but if I think just because of them already having an opening, they could probably get pretty close to knowing that's what they wanted to do. I mean, anyone who's met Marcus Freeman isn't going to expect Marcus Freeman to do poor in a job interview. Like that, right. that doesn't seem very realistic. So I think if Marcus Freeman did interview for an opening like that, I think it would be probably the last step in the process and not the first step. So, I mean, we can sort of split hairs in terms of whether or not he did or didn't and how serious the interest was. I mean, I don't think there has been a formal interview. There has not been one reported as such.
Right.
But
I say that. I think what I thought the question was, had he done that earlier in his career before he was at Notre Dame? That was something I had looked into.
Got it. Yeah, I don't think so. But I do not know. I wouldn't necessarily know if he had that without having to go back and do some research. Tom Creevy said, why would Coach Freeman be interested in a pro job like Giants or Titans?
Well, again, it's what's going on in the college game right now with the transfer portal and the payments and player movement. Again, Marcus has been really fortunate in that he hasn't had to rebuild a whole team. I think I read somewhere about Iowa State, about how many players are in the portal or have left the program. It was, I need to research it, but I think I read that it was less than 20 players. Now they had a coaching change, but even when you think about how much Notre Dame's roster is going to change in 1 year with a lot of good retention, with a lot of good vibe about the program, he's bringing in 29 recruits, and let's just say there's only six transfers, 35. I mean, that's more than a third of your roster. That's a third of your roster in terms of total roster. It's more than a third when you talk about 95 scholarship players. And so that's a lot. I think Marcus Freeman feels like the program culture is at a good place. But again, what if the market changed? You know, he's very fortunate right now because, and Notre Dame is fortunate to have him, but that I've never seen the administration so aligned with a coach, with a football coach, as I have seen it with Marcus Freeman.
Yeah, I think specific to these jobs, because I do know, I do follow the NFL more closely, the Giants do have a lot of interesting young players, and that could be alluring for someone, even though that they have sort of been almost historically bad in recent years and have struggling to get things figured out in New York. And the Titans seem to be in a rut. The Titans seem weird, like, cause they let go of Mike Vrabel. And if Marcus Freeman would be your new coach, it's like, well, I guess that would just be recognizing that you made a mistake in letting Mike Vrabel go, which I think they probably did anyways. I don't think that job would be as alluring as the Giants in terms of roster talent. And obviously when you talk about NFL, you want a young quarterback that you can mold. Obviously they have Jackson Dart in New York and Cam Ward with the Tennessee Titans. And so that could make those jobs attractive too, but obviously not so much for Marcus Freeman that he's leaving Notre Dame. So he obviously didn't find it moving enough to get him to change jobs. All right. I wanted to talk a little bit about December before we hop into the chat for some more questions and sort of look forward to. I think there's been some stuff that you've reported that's been really good on blueandgold.com in terms of what Notre Dame is doing and who's of interest. So let's start here. What kind of workouts or practices was Notre Dame able to have despite not going to a bowl this month?
So once they were shut out of the playoff and they opted out of the bowl, then they had to take 7 days off. And so they did that. And then by then they were ready to go into exams. And what they did during exam week before they let the players go home was they took advantage of the 20-hour off-season rule. And they had some on-field workouts during finals. They worked around the finals just as they would have had they been prepping for that first round of the playoff. They had some practices, got some work done. Some of it was, hey, we've been tinkering with some changes that we're going to make to the offense and defense. Let's get a head start on some of that. Some of it was a symbolic, let's turn the page from last year. That was last year. This is 2026. And so it was kind of a healing process, a symbolic turning of the page process, but there was some pragmatic parts in terms of getting some work done. And they could have continued to do that, and they can continue to do that in January by the 20-hour rule. So the thought that they wouldn't get any practices in was not true. They were able to get some in.
All right. Offensive guard Billy Shrouth became the fourth player to declare for the NFL draft from Notre Dame with eligibility remaining. He followed running backs Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price, and offensive tackle Emil Wagner. Do we think that's the last of the NFL draft announcements?
I do. I would be surprised if somebody else. I mean, there's players that are on that kind of bubble that can make that decision. But you would think that they would have made the decision by now. I know how Notre Dame is really good about with their social media and so forth, and staggering these departures out so that kid kind of gets his spotlight. It's not like seven in one day, and you know, they kind of get buried in a news dump. They've been really good about giving everybody kind of their spotlight as they deserve it. And but I don't think that we're going to see another one. But I mean, again, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, with Emil and Billy in particular, they both really struggled with that decision. They went back and forth. They were staying, they were going, they were staying, they were going, and for different reasons, but they ended up both going.
Yeah, I would be a little surprised too if someone, obviously they still have time to make this decision, but I think everyone has a good idea of what they're doing, unless something changes or they're surprised by something. I think that we'll probably have seen the end of that, but we'll see if something changes there. The biggest transfer portal departure of the month happened earlier this evening when defensive end Joshua Burnham announced his portal entry plan. The chat has been buzzing about this since we started the show. How big of a loss is Burnham?
I think he's a big loss, especially if you don't now add an edge rusher, because there's a lot of really good talent at the two defensive end positions, and there's a lot of ifs. And we can kind of go through this. You think about Logan Thomas. He's got star qualities. He doesn't have a star body yet, and he's been on campus for 2 years, and he still looks like a big wide receiver. You know, he looks like a boundary receiver. He doesn't look like a defensive end. Is Bryce Young going to lift his way into being a defensive tackle at some point? Is he an inside guy eventually? You know, I don't think either of the freshmen are going to be big enough to help you as an every down player or even as a heavy rotation player. You can tell me if you feel differently about that, Tyler. Again, there are bodies. You have Boubacar Traore. You're losing junior Tui Halamaka as well. And Chris Burgess is moving inside. So I think maybe a portal pass rusher on that side is what you need. I do think Anthony Sacka is going to end up being a defensive end. But again, a lot of these guys are young. And Burnham was a proven commodity. He wasn't always a healthy commodity, but he was a proven guy. And I think he will go to a place where he's guaranteed to be a starter and play a lot of downs and get an NFL career going.
Yeah, I think it's a big loss. You gave Notre Dame the veteran defensive end presence it needed and would have going into next season. They already losing Jordan Botello and junior Tui Halamaka from last year. And so to add Burnham to that list is a blow. You basically have Boubacar Traore and Bryce Young coming back, and then after that, it's a lot of unproven guys. Burnham was second among defensive end in tackles for loss with six, and also second in sacks with three among the defensive ends on Notre Dame's roster last season. And that was without him playing a huge role. He was fifth in defensive end snaps. He dealt with a strained adductor, and this, I think, is getting to this question I put here or statement here from T. Dawson. Please explain to me why Burnham is leaving. Burnham dealt with a strained adductor in the early portion of the season, but I know he had his big breakout game against Boston College, and Notre Dame finally gave him an opportunity to sort of play in that game, and he spoke to us after that game and said that, yes, the adductor issue had been bothering him early in the season, but he felt like he was ready to go sooner than when he was given an opportunity to sort of get back out there and be himself again. And so there could be some frustration in terms of how little he was used before November. He ended up starting the last four games of the season after that Boston College game. But Notre Dame was maybe over protective of him and maybe believed in some other guys because it did have other capable defensive ends on the roster. I think next season would be a little bit of a different story in terms of his playing time. But I think if you're a guy going into your last season of college eligibility, do you want to trust guys that maybe you felt didn't give you as much of an opportunity as you wanted, or you want to try to start fresh somewhere else? So I think that's probably a little bit of what happened here. I know people say, well, who's better than him? But I think if you have your mindset on doing that, and I think you probably get paid a lot to do that somewhere else too, like Notre Dame. I would be surprised if Notre Dame was being cheap at the defensive end position. Like, that wouldn't make a lot of sense to me in terms of if Mike Martin's talking about, oh, how do you allocate your money in rev share in terms of what positions hold value? Defensive end has to be towards the top, right? And so obviously maybe Boubacar Traore demands a lot there, and Bryce Young demands a lot there, but you got to have more than two defensive ends in this day and age in college football that you can really trust. I would think that Notre Dame will probably go out in the portal to try to replace Joshua Burnham's production. And then we'll see who of those other guys can step up, whether it's Logan Thomas or Preston Center, the guys that were freshmen this past year, Joseph Reef and Dominic Kulak. Kulak was out with an injury during the season. Then obviously I had a couple of impressive incoming freshmen in terms of Rodney Dunham and Ebenezer Iwatade. I think Dunham is much more college ready than Iwatade. Iwatade is pretty slight. Him and Logan Thomas can share jerseys maybe, but
Thomas all together.
Yeah, but Logan Thomas needs to get bigger to make a bigger impact going forward. So I guess beyond Burnham, go ahead. You got something?
Yeah, I just want, but go ahead with your thought. I wanted to explain the math, because I think people get worried when they see this number creeping up of outgoing transfers, and I was going to explain why the number has to be big. But go ahead with your thought, and then we'll do the math lesson.
Yeah,
and then we'll watch our viewership drop.
Well, I was gonna just expand beyond Burnham and ask if you thought, like, Notre Dame's done a pretty good job so far of keeping players on its roster. I think this Burnham one to me seems like a big loss. The NFL departures aren't ideal. Like, you'd love for Billy Shrouth to stay, or Emil Wagner to stay. I would have preferred Shrouth over Wagner personally. Kenny Minchie was probably never realistic that he was going to stay. Obviously, you'd like to have a good backup quarterback you trust, but I think most of the other losses have been pretty understandable. And even Burnham, I think, like, I can see it from his point of view, if as a Notre Dame fan, you're disappointed and you want him to stay here and contribute a lot to Notre Dame next season.
Yeah, I would agree. They've done a good job of retaining, and I think that's been Marcus's hallmark, is being able to retain most of the players that you want to retain. There are, like, star players at other colleges that are leaving. And not saying that Burnham isn't a star, but I mean, big time guys, the best player on some teams are leaving their teams. And I think Notre Dame is keeping its core, but let's do the math real quick. When my grandkids say, "Grandpa, can you help me with math?" I get a headache. If they say, "Hey, help me with an English paper," let's go. So we're going to make this painless. Notre Dame is essentially at 95 scholarships. That's where they want to be with this 105 limit of roster limit. They have some flexibility there. But let's play with a number 95 and make this easy. They've added 29 recruits. And let's say they're going to add 6 from the portal. They may add more than that, but let's just say it's just 6. So then you are at 130 players. So you want to get back down to 95. You've got to lose 35 players. They had 13 players with expiring eligibility. So the rest of them are going to have to medically retire. They're planning on them going into the portal, or they're declaring early for the NFL, or getting abducted by aliens. That could be the 4th. But that's a big number. So when you see this number, it's not, oh my gosh, there's a mutiny on the team. This is the new math of roster churn and roster building.
Yeah, you have to anticipate losses, and you have to be willing to lose talent to bring in talent. Like, you can't hoard talent. It's a lot harder to do in today's day and age of college football and NIL, revenue sharing, and then obviously the scholarship and eligibility standards that they're holding up too. So there will be plenty of more to come. I guess one more noteworthy roster exit came this week from Donovan Heinisch, a defensive tackle who has retired from football. That creates an even bigger need for Notre Dame this season. I think this offseason, defensive tackle was going to be a huge storyline, and that just creates an even bigger need. What do you think is the right number of portal targets at defensive tackle for Notre Dame?
Before Heinisch's departure, I would have said two. It depends on what, you know, if you're fully committed to Burgess moving over there and what you're thinking about Bryce Young, if he's got position flexibility, and if you're going to add another end, I could see three. I think you'd go get a starter. The person that we don't know about is Jason Anye, because he's applied for a sixth year. I think he's got a good case. But when the NCAA is your arbiter, you're like, I don't know if I really want to depend on that. So, but especially if you don't, if you're Notre Dame and you don't feel good about Jason's case, I would say three. If you do feel about his case, you could probably get by with two. There's, again, they have some numbers there. I think there's some guys that are running out of opportunity window, like Brennan Vernon, for instance. Mm-hmm. I think there's some interesting body types in Sean Cebolano Jr. and is it Davion or Davion?
Davion.
Davion Dixon. I mean, those are big Lewis Nix size nose guards that are pretty interesting to have on the roster. I don't know how soon they are, you know, close they are to playing. I think Elijah Hughes and Burgess are two guys that are real wild cards in this. Elijah Hughes, to me, was one of the most surprising players on the roster last year.
Yeah.
He played really well. He played enough downs where you say, okay, this is real. And he played high leverage snaps. Burgess, I think, could be a star at defensive tackle if he embraces it and, you know, puts a little bit more weight on, but it's a new position for him. And how fast, I think it's more of a matter of when and not if with him, but if when isn't next year, then, you know, it's a ticklish situation. What's your magic number on the interior defensive lineman?
Yeah, I think I would be okay with two, and I think you could settle for one if Jason Onye returns. I think that's still relying on guys you have on the roster a lot, but I do think you have so many bodies committed there that sort of where we talk about the math of things, like unless you start losing more defensive tackles, it's hard to commit more numbers to one position. But yeah, because it is such an obvious need, like I think this would be the position that you would maybe do a little overkill at, or you know what I mean? Like if you're going to be greedy at defensive tackle this off season. But that doesn't mean guys like Christopher Burgess or Cole Mullins can't make an impact. I'm curious, not like with the departure of Joshua Burnham, is it worth seeing if Cole Mullins is a defensive end again? Like, cause I think there was some, he's more of a slighter frame than those other guys. And I liked him as a potential defensive end. And it felt like he was moved to defensive tackle more out of need than maybe what was best for him. But I think we've also seen like guys that move back and forth, it sort of stunts their development too. So that might not be good news for Cole Mullins either. So I'm curious what happens there. Burgess, I did a defensive tackle outlook story today, and I had some people reach out to me after it published, and someone mentioned to me that Burgess is already up to 297 pounds. So his transformation to a defensive tackle is well underway. I really liked him as a high school recruit. He was raw, but very strong, very powerful and explosive. So I'm curious to see what he can look like on the defensive interior, because I feel like that was what was best for him. I was just a little uncertain if he was going to be fully committed to doing that. A lot of guys as high school recruits, they want to be ends rather than tackles, and they want to be offensive tackles rather than offensive guards. So that's not necessarily surprising or specific to Christopher Burgess Jr., but that is part of the process that sort of guys have to commit to being what maybe the best versions of themselves could be moving forward.
I'm just cracking up because I had a phone call that was, and then they texted me, and that's what they wanted to talk about.
You need to have an auto response. Tune in on YouTube.
I said on YouTube right now. You want the quick answer?
All right, let's hop into some of the questions we've been getting. Thank you for all for sending them in. There's been a lot of chatter in here. Robin Rudy said, oh, this is Jeff Stevens, the entire defensive line has been an issue for a while. I wonder how, if Marcus Freeman needs to move Al Washington to linebackers coach and get a more dynamic defensive line coach / recruiter.
I don't think that's a bad idea, not necessarily going along with the rationale that Washington's deficient there, but I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibilities of the way that the opening can play out. You know, would Al Washington feel like, and he's coached linebackers before, this helps him in terms of presenting him as a defensive coordinator for the future? I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting question, but it could play that way out. I know Coach Washington has his critics. I think probably the loudest critique is about interior defensive linemen, and yet he's developed them. Has he been able to recruit the five stars? I mean, he's been hitting some home runs at defensive end.
Right.
But there has been criticism. But in terms of your idea about him being in another position, again, then who do you get as that defensive line coach? Who's an elite defensive line coach that you could see fitting in there? Certainly, I would think, you know, from what I was told, with that Marcus was very happy with his new deal with the restructuring. There's also a commitment to making the assistant coaches happy and making Notre Dame an attractive place from a financial standpoint to work. So I don't think money would be a problem with Marcus getting, and who wouldn't want to work for Marcus Freeman if you're a really good defensive line coach, given his defensive background and, you know, how hot of a coach he is in terms of, you know, evolving as a head coach. So I think that's a pretty good idea. I'm just not sure that I go along with the motivation for it, but I like the idea.
Yeah, I don't agree necessarily that Al Washington needs to be replaced. And so I guess if I'm buying into the idea that he does need to be replaced, my question would be, well, then just get rid of him. Like, why keep him as the linebackers coach? I mean, I understand if you think he's a really good coach, but I don't know. Like, it would seem to me that if you were going to get rid of Al Washington as the defensive line coach, then I think you should just get rid of him totally.
Right. And what I was trying to, and maybe I didn't do a good job of saying, I was saying not get rid of him, but maybe he would want to do that and you would have a different defensive line coach. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm trying to say this is how it could play out. Not that I thought he needed to be gotten rid of.
I just want to
make sure you thought.
Yeah, no, I wasn't getting that impression from you. I think just the concept to me, I think you don't move him to linebackers coach because you want a better defensive line coach. You move him to linebackers coach because if you think he's the best linebackers coach that you can get. Like, I don't think you, like, if you think you need a better defensive line coach, hire a better defensive line coach and then hire a better linebackers coach and get rid of Al Washington. If that's the premise that you're working with, I'm not operating from that premise, but that's my philosophy as it comes to that. I don't think that you just move him back to linebackers because you think you need a better defensive line coach. You just get rid of him if you think you need a better defensive line coach. So I guess I'm picking nits there, but I think there certainly needs to be continued growth on the defensive line, but I think he's been getting the job done. I mean, he just signed a really good class of defensive linemen up there with some of the best that Notre Dame has signed in recent memory. So it would be an odd timing to get rid of him as a defensive line coach or to move him back to linebackers, in my opinion. So I'd be interested to see if that happens and the explanation for that, if it did. Terry Howie says, how many players will the Irish take in the portal?
Well, I came up arbitrarily with six just because I wanted the math to be easy for me. Let's go through the positions. If you took two defensive tackles, a defensive end, I think they need a defensive back of some sort just for depth at least, and maybe a nickel. If you're going to have a kicker, that's five. A wide receiver is six. A backup quarterback is seven. I'm going to say in the neighborhood of 7 to 8. How about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I would tend to go on the higher end because it seems like there always ends up being more than you think. So I would go probably 8 to 10. I think Notre Dame is going to address its needs, and we'll see how many more needs develop in terms of more transfers out. But I think we have a pretty good sense of what Notre Dame needs right now. And I think, listen, we were talking about this being a year that Notre Dame sort of pushing to go all in. And so if it can find those guys that it feels like can make an impact for Notre Dame next season, I don't think it's going to be shy about trying to add them. ND in Georgia says, what are the repercussions if a school exceeds the revenue share or pays NIL that is not approved by the clearinghouse? Who passes down that penalty?
So I did a story trying to explain some of the ABCs the other day of this whole revenue picture. And it probably is more like the RSXs. It's very complicated. And one in the sources that I spoke to, the big bugaboo is, what is the enforcement piece? that's the problem. There is allegedly one in place. I'm not sure that it has any teeth. And so we're going to see, because there's going to be people that don't play by the rules. And this is why there's such an urgency of trying to get Congress involved and getting something passed that's congressional, because as it exists right now, it's more the honor system than it is something that's really enforceable, is my take on it.
Yeah, in theory, the NCAA is the answer, but the NCAA is losing its teeth, seemingly, and sort of passing the buck on and trying to get Congress.
And
to,
not getting implants either to replace them.
T-Dawson says, how quickly, once the portal opens this Friday, will we start to hear about players joining a new team? Immediately?
I think I was talking to somebody, a source today, and they think the first 4 days of the portal is going to be crazy. I don't know if that means everybody's going to sign, because I think there has been a lot of preliminary work done. I think with Notre Dame, they like to have the players visit. So I don't know that Notre Dame is necessarily going to, you know, have people sign in the first 4 days, but I think they'll have a lot of those players visiting. And again, the portal is open for 15 days beginning on January 2nd. That doesn't mean you have to have signed somewhere in those 15 days. Notre Dame starts classes the day after the portal closes for spring semester. And Notre Dame has had stragglers before. I think Blake Groupe was a little bit late coming in, but it wasn't that late. It wasn't like the second week classes. It was still that first week. So I don't think this is going to be a long, drawn out process when it pertains to Notre Dame. And keep in mind, Notre Dame starts at scouting a potential portal people way back in July. They vetted the people that they're interested in. And so it's not the speed dating process. It is a little bit, but it's not what it appears and what it is for some schools. They have done a lot of the background on these players.
Yeah. And T. Dawson followed up with, can teams talk to portal players before Friday? And legally the answer is no. The reality is yes, that folks are having discussions behind the scenes, back channeling, all kinds of
with
things.
With agents. Yeah.
With agents, and these things are happening, even though they're not supposed to be happening. But there's really no repercussions because everyone's doing it, right? Like it's similar in the professional leagues too, like where they have like official days where free agency begins, and as soon as free agency starts, all these signings get announced. So this is what is becoming of the transfer portal era. In the transfer portal window, it's sort of like the free agency window in professional sports right now.
I'll give you an example. Last year, I did an intel piece on women's basketball recruiting, And I had a source and one that I very much believe that Olivia Miles was getting inquiries the first month of the season to go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that happens all the time. Lauren Hamilton says, what happened to Brendan Vernon? I remember everyone being excited about him.
Tyler, you can probably speak to this better than I can. I'll give it a shot here. You know, it felt like when he was a recruit, he kind of started out as a five-star, and then it was a little bit of a dip in terms of what people expected of him. But I know Notre Dame was really happy that they signed him, and there were a lot of other schools that wanted him. He came in as a big defensive end with the thought that he would get bigger and be an interior player. And Tyson Ford kind of had a similar path, and it didn't work out great for Tyson. And it doesn't seem like it's working for Brendan Vernon. I can't tell you why it's not working for him, because there's been other players that it has worked for. And Howard Cross is a guy like that. Riley Mills was kind of an outside guy that went inside. So I can't tell you why. Maybe Tyler has more insight into why it's not working for Brendan. I think there's been some injuries too, but not to the extent that how big of a stall he has.
Yeah, he just hasn't panned out for whatever reason. I don't know that I could pinpoint specifically why, other than that he just hasn't been as good as Notre Dame thought he was as a recruit. If you look this past year, I don't think he played in a game this past season, and he was playing scout team offensive line a lot in practice. Now that I think that speaks highly of Brendan Vernon and his willingness to be a good teammate. But I think that also isn't necessarily a great sign for the progress that he is or isn't making, in terms of making an impact on Notre Dame's defensive line. So I would be surprised if he has a late career coming out party, sort of like a Javon McKinley or something like that. We don't get those as often on the defensive line as you do at maybe some other positions, and maybe don't get that as much anymore with the transfer portal era as you did maybe before the transfer portal era. But he has not been able to make the climb. And I do think the switching back from defensive end to defensive tackle and some of the uncertainty there probably didn't help him. I think he's been sort of stuck in that rut as a defensive tackle since then.
Look, Tyler, my math lesson made the viewership go up. Let's do some more math.
All right, folks, now it's time for long division. Outbound 1219 says, so what is our fine host's New Year's resolutions for the up-and-coming 2026 year? I don't know about you, Eric. I'm not a huge resolutions guy, but are you?
I make, goals at different times. I don't do it on New Year's because we're usually pretty busy. If you remember 4 years ago, Tyler, you and I worked till midnight, and then we started at the news site 1 minute after midnight, and we were, I think, up all night that night. We didn't have time to make resolutions other than I need some sleep. If you can stall for me, I'll think of one real quick.
I guess I would just say it feels like New Year. The new year for us in terms of job stuff, it doesn't feel like it starts to late February because the football off season starts right up as soon as the football season ends. And we don't get much of a reprieve here in late December or early January. So, and then the coaching cycle happens. And so we try to get, that's when I maybe try to reset a little bit more than I do right now. Cause right now it's I guess New Year's Eve is tomorrow. We better get ready for that. But I'll have plans with friends and stuff like that, but I haven't necessarily set any resolutions going into next year.
So I've got three. One is, this one's going to be boring for you guys. I have a buddy that is a former power lifter and a former cop, and we're going to start doing resistance training and strength training next month. So
all right,
if I come in here sore and like this, you know the reason why. My kind of general resolution is make every day count. Don't waste the day because you don't know how many of you had. And then my short-term goal is, remember when I ate the turkey leg on one of our other YouTube shows?
Yeah.
The other one's still in the freezer. I couldn't get the grandkids to fight over it. And so I'm going to thaw that out and eat it on New Year's Day.
All right.
That's in front of nobody with no cameras on.
Well, what the heck, Eric? People want, if you want, I'll let you go live on our channel. Just Eric Hansen eating second turkey leg. Happy New Year. All right. A little more portal discussion. Scott Fegan says, what are the biggest holes for 2026? Defensive line, wide receiver, tight end, other units. So I'm curious if you agree with any of those, disagree with those, or if you have others in mind as well.
Yeah, I kind of went through it. I think wide receiver, boundary receiver, definitely. Backup quarterback, definitely. Tight end, I don't think so. Running back, I think if there's a bargain for a star player, I think if there's not, they're pretty happy with the room they have. The only ticklish part is Kedron Young coming off that ACL, but they feel like he's going to be ready and they're really excited about him. Then flipping to the other side, we talked about the defensive lineman. I don't think at linebacker there's a need for that unless they were to lose somebody like Bowen or Snead unexpectedly to the draft or something else. I think Adon Shuler is staying put. I do think there needs to be some depth at that corner nickel area, just with losing Tucker and Hobbs and Devontae Smith being out of eligibility. I think there's some really good talent coming in the door, but I think maybe an experienced backup makes a little sense at one of those positions. And then I do think they need to go get a kicker.
Yeah, I don't think we have major disagreements there. I do like the nickelback cornerback like possibility there. I also agree that tight end doesn't seem like a need to me. I think there were folks talking in the chat about that, and someone even said something about the injuries that they have at tight end makes them need it. Cooper Flanagan's the only one coming off an injury, and he will be a long time removed from his Achilles injury. Now, obviously, things didn't go as planned for his return at the end of the season. But I think Notre Dame should be fine with the options it has there with Cooper Flanagan, James Flanagan, Ty Washington, Jack
Ian
Larson.
Ian Premmer walking in the door.
Ian Premmer and Preston.
You have six. You have six of them. And there is good optimism that Cooper Flanagan is going to be 100% healthy for the spring.
I wanted to get into, if you have any in mind, since we talked about needs, are there any names at those positions of needs that are most intriguing to you that Notre Dame should try to go get?
I haven't been tracking it as closely as you have. I've been more looking at it generically and kind of figuring out what's going on with the team. So I'll let you take that one. I'll let you take the ball there because I know you've been following those names.
Yeah, I have one for three different positions.
He's a three position player. He's gonna have a lot of money.
One each for three positions.
Okay.
And these aren't, I mean, if you've been following the portal closely and on our message board, these aren't names that will blindside you by any means. Wake Forest defensive tackle Mateen Ibirogba. I think he is an intriguing potential target for Notre Dame at the defensive tackle position. More of a pass rusher than a run stuffer, but I think Notre Dame could use a talent like his on its roster. Michigan State wide receiver Nick Marsh, probably one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver, that will enter the transfer portal this offseason. Wow. Although I guess Cam Coleman is from Auburn, is going in there, and I think Cam Coleman could make a pretty strong argument that he's better than Nick Marsh. But anyways, Nick Marsh would be someone that I'm interested in, and there was a question here from Patrick that says, hey guys, I saw that Notre Dame and LSU are the top two for Nick Marsh. Can you confirm that or provide any additional info? I don't necessarily know if he has a top two, and that's Notre Dame and LSU. I think it's someone that Notre Dame is interested in. I can't speak to how close or who's in the running quite yet. But I am aware that Notre Dame is being connected to him. And LSU is a school that I've seen others have suggested as well. And then when Joshua Burnham went in the portal, the first name that came to mind to me was Miami of Ohio defensive end Adam Trick. He is a talented guy that I think would obviously bring experience. Well, maybe not obviously if you don't know who he is, so that's probably a stupid word to use, Tyler. But Adam Trick is someone that has played a lot of football at Miami and been productive there. Obviously, a Notre Dame tie with Chuck Martin being the Miami of Ohio head coach, and I think there's some other Notre Dame ties on that coaching staff. So that could be a potential edge rushing option for Notre Dame in the transfer portal. So what do you think? Did I sell you on those guys?
When you said Adam Trick, I was thinking of the band Cheap Trick.
I don't know if he'll be cheap, but that's what the transfer portal is all about. Getting towards the end of the hour, I wanted to see one of the things you put on our, description for the video today was off-season risers. So I wanted to maybe quickly go through some guys that come to mind for you in terms of players on offense and defense who could surge this winter or spring to take on bigger roles next season. I don't know if you've been able to put together a list. I actually didn't come up with a full list before we got started today, but is there anything or any names you want to highlight in terms of and maybe relating it to some of the intel that you've been receiving that you've been reporting on blueandgold.com?
So I'm for offense. And these aren't in order. This was just kind of stream of consciousness after I posted my column, which was a mad scramble. But I went with Will Black. I think Will Black is going to be very competitive and competing for one of those guard spots. I think Gerby Lambert's going to move out to tackle. And so then you'll have, you know, presumably either Charles Jagaza or Anthony Knapp competing for one guard. I think Will Black has a shot to win the other guard spot. He would be competing with Sullivan Absher and some other people. I have James Flanagan. I think James Flanagan is going to be Notre Dame's number one tight end. I think he has a really good chance at that. If Ian Premmer were an early enrollee, I'd probably roll him in. I didn't put any freshmen on the list.
Yeah.
He's one of the few people that aren't coming in January. Aeneas Williams, I think he's got the inside track on being the number one running back. But, man, I think it's really going to be fun in the spring and then once Kedron gets back in training camp, presumably, watching that shake out because there's not just an obvious two out of that group. I went with Micah Gilbert. I think Notre Dame will go out and get a boundary receiver. I think Cam Williams is in play, too. It's going to be a really interesting spring for him based on some of the intel I had. And then I went with like a couple of injured players, Jaden Greathouse coming back into play, Charles Jagaza, who hasn't played in a year. So those were my offensive players.
Okay. Yeah. I think I agree with all of those. Mentioning Will Black, I'm interested in what Matty Augustine can do this off season.
They love him. I think he's more blocked because of the tackles.
Right.
He could move inside, but he's been playing. But Black has been training inside. That's why I had him ahead. But they love both of those guys.
Yeah, and folks on the message board were giving me some pushback about the Will Black playing guard idea because everyone wants to move Anthony Knapp away from tackle, and they feel like Will Black is the next Joe Alt. I think we got to let Will Black be Will Black and quit putting that pressure on him. But I thought Matty Augustine was maybe in a better spot early on last season to contribute if necessary than Will Black was. That doesn't mean that will necessarily be the case.
Will Black surged in his November practices, I can tell you that.
Right. Yeah, so like that can definitely change in the next 8 months. But I think those are two guys that can – bring some competition to the offensive line and push guys to make sure that they secure their roles or maybe just unseat them fully themselves. So I think that it'll be interesting. It's going to be an interesting offseason for the offensive line. I wrote a column this week about how I feel like this is the year that Notre Dame needs to be a dominant offensive line. I don't think it was a dominant offensive line last season, and it needs to really – hit that home this season. All right, what about defensive guys who could surge?
Well, I think there's opportunity on the defensive line. So let's go away from that first and talk about, and then we can load up on defensive line guys. I think saying Madden Foramo is kind of cheating because he was already in the rotation. Yeah. But with Kingston Viliamu-Asa out until who knows when, I mean, because he suffered that late in the season, Madden Foramo is going to play a lot. In the defensive backfield, I have a feeling Dallas Golden's going to find his way onto the field somewhere. Mm-hmm. Ethan Long feels like a guy that needs to be in the rotation. If we go to freshmen, I mean, those freshman defensive backs, my goodness, you've been doing film reviews on these guys. I'll let you talk about those guys. But and then let's go to the defensive line. I think Christopher Burgess is going to get a chance to be a contributor. I think Elijah Hughes is a guy that could really be a surprise and be as good or better than Donovan Heinisch with another year under his belt. I just was really impressed with him last year. And then Bryce Young, it seems weird to call him an ascender, but I think people felt like he would be a star last year and he was a good, solid player. So maybe he's going to come up. Logan Thomas, if he can put on the protein, I mean, that guy could be really, really good. Those would be kind of the guys that I'm looking for. How about you, Tyler?
Yeah, those make sense. Those freshman defensive backs that you're talking about, the guys that will be joining the team next month, there's some impressive guys there. Joey O'Brien is a very talented safety. Kari Adams is a really good corner, has great length and speed. Aiden Pouncey, I think, could play either cornerback or safety. They're going to try him at safety or cornerback first, but I think he could be a good safety as well. So there is an embarrassment of riches there in terms of young defensive backs for Mike Mickens. We'll see which of them become the ones that are sort of the next in line for Notre Dame. It's sort of curious too. Like, there's more opportunity there because Mark Zachary's playing basketball. I'm curious, what that does in terms of opening the door for someone else, and if not, that hurts Mark Zachary's development as a football player too, because he essentially was Notre Dame's third cornerback, or at least third outside cornerback, at the end of the season. So, lots of opportunity on the defense for guys to step up, but maybe more in rotational roles than starting roles because they do have so much defensive talent coming back this offseason.
If they didn't get a portal nickel, would you think it's Dallas Golden, or would you think one of those freshmen could handle it, like a Pouncey's? Or I would think Kari Adams. I mean, he texted Kyle Kelly. We're talking and said, where are you starting out? And Kyle Kelly texted him and he said boundary. So I mean, he's following in Leonard Moore's footsteps, but
yeah, I wouldn't see him as a nickelback guy. I guess Pouncey could be, but yeah, I think Golden is someone that he was certainly challenged at times last year as a freshman, but I think there were signs of what he can become as a nickelback. So yeah, he would be my favorite personal option there in terms of the young guys at nickelback. I guess I would be somewhat interested in Cree Thomas potentially, but he never really emerged there last year. So that makes me wonder if that just doesn't make sense for them. Nick Reddish is the guy probably most likely to be a nickel in the incoming freshman class, more of a safety in high school, but I think could play nickel at the college level. I'm not sure if he'll be physically ready to do that as a freshman, but I think he's the most nickel body type, I guess you would say, and plays most like a nickelback at the high school level. All right. I guess just real quick before we get out of here, wanted to mention that Notre Dame added a Christmas Day commitment from Australian punter Jasper Scaife. He was added to the 2026 class, has 4 years of eligibility remaining, assuming
there's maybe it was December 26th in his part of the world by then, and that maybe didn't see the inconvenience in that.
Yeah, that was I was like, okay, all right, this is what's happening. So he I reading Jack Sobel did the story for us. He played for Hawthorn Football Club of the Australian Football League or the AFL. He was a forward who impressed Hawthorn with his booming kick with West Perth of the West Australian Football League in 2024. He's never played American football before, similar to James Randell. He worked with the Pro Kick, the same coach that used to work for Pro Kick Australia and has his own company now, Inside Tony Punting, that coaches Mackenzie Morgan, the same coach that worked with Tory Taylor, who's was the, I think, a Ray Guy Award winner, and he is the punter for the Chicago Bears right now. Sorry, my brain short-circuited there for a second. I'm not sure fully. I haven't done enough research to know if that is the one-stop shop for punting in terms of Notre Dame's roster next year, if they will try to bring some experience in. I would imagine they feel good about it. He's a 21-year-old, so he's not as young as a normal freshman. He's
young compared to James Randell.
yeah, and young compared to me. So that'll be an interesting addition for Notre Dame. Notre Dame is looking into the Australian pipeline, which is where a lot of folks have been turning for punters lately. So interesting to see how he handles that as a freshman, if he can be ready to come in and start right away. All right. I think that'll do it for us this week. We appreciate everyone tuning in on the Tuesday night. We'll be back to the Monday schedule next week, unless something sneaks up on us. But make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Subscribe to blueandgold.com. There's a 50% off deal available right now with the transfer portal opening. Take advantage of that, and we'll have plenty of coverage over at blueandgold.com when the transfer portal does open up. So make sure you're tuned in to what we're covering over there. All right, everyone, have a good week and a happy new year.